whether it's from me or from Don or from Brian and his staff, we might be reaching out to you for particular pieces of information. So if you could try to provide that when the time comes, that would be fantastic. Brian, anything you want to add on that?
No, what I will do is, since Dawn will be the chair when we start working on it, I'll just reach out to Dawn and
okay.
What the process is and if Dawn has any formatting changes that she desires.
Okay, great. Excellent. Thank you. Moving ahead to the meeting dates for 2021. So the proposed meeting dates are March 24th, June 23rd, September 22nd, and December 22nd. And I think right now we've got them all tentatively scheduled as continuing with teleconference calls rather than the in-person meeting, at least until the world opens up again. And I think we're looking to hold those meetings from 10 o'clock a.m. to noon as we have the last two meetings. So again, March 24th, June 23rd, September 22nd, and December 22nd. So if you can put those dates on your schedule, that would be great. Anybody have any questions or concerns, issues with those proposed dates?
John Carnimola here. I would not be able to attend the September 22nd.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you for letting us know that. We appreciate it. Anybody else have any questions or concerns about those dates and your availability? No. Okay. All right. Then we will plan on moving forward.
Just a second to accept those dates.
Oh, we need to vote on that?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that. So then, do we have a motion to approve the dates of March 24th, June 23rd, September 22nd, and December 22nd as our four meeting SRC meeting dates in the year 2021?
Kendra Malinsky, I make the motion to approve those dates for 2021.
Okay, thank you, Kendra. Do we have a second?
This is Dawn Russell. I second the motion.
Dawn Russell, okay. Dawn is our second, so thank you very much. So all those in favor of approving those dates, please say aye.
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 Okay, thank you. Any opposed? Any discussion? Okay, the ayes have it. So those will be our dates for 2021, March 24th, June 23rd, September 22nd, and December 22nd. So thank you all for that. Next on the agenda is a report from BESB State Director Brian Sigmund.
Okay, folks, I've got a few things to go over. COVID-19 has certainly continued to require that we make a number of adjustments to the way we deliver our services, and our service delivery model has been evolving as has COVID-19. I think that folks, I've been circulating the governor's updates, and you've seen, I just sent one out today, in fact, that has some additional states that got added to the travel advisory list, and there's some important information in terms of that travel advisory list. So I do encourage folks that when I do send out those updates to look at the method that's available, it's contained within those updates, how you could get them directly through the governor's office by signing up for them. I think it's important that folks stay is involved and as up to date as possible, because it's very much an evolving process, and we are adapting to the guidance as it comes out, and we are modifying our approach to service delivery, adapting to a very fluid situation where I just would encourage folks to understand that everything that we do is based on the information we have available to us as it stands right now. If circumstances improve, and we certainly all hope they will, then we can certainly modify our approach to delivering services accordingly. But on a similar vein, if the unfortunate were to occur and things need to tighten up somewhat beyond where we are at the moment, then we would have to make adjustments accordingly. So I frame all of what we are doing and what I'm about to give you updates on, that this is as of where we are today. So where we are today is that we have issued out some protocols to our private contractors as well as to our field staff on how we can resume in-person services in the community in the safest way possible. And in-person services do include what we refer to as close contact services, which are services that are provided where the social distancing of 6 feet cannot be maintained for a variety of reasons, such as a mobility lesson where you need to actually do a sighted guide instruction, or perhaps if you're an individual who's deaf and blind and you need a support services provider that can do tactile signing. Those are a couple examples of where you would have a service that would require something closer than 6 feet social distancing. And so we put some instructions in place. There is a questionnaire. We have questions that have to be asked on the morning of, before the staff person or the contractor would then proceed with providing the in-person service, just to be sure that no one's going into an unsafe situation. You know, there are questions around symptoms that the person may or may not be experiencing. There's questions around whether they've been in contact with somebody in the last 14 days who's experienced those symptoms. There's questions about whether or not they've been ordered to quarantine or visited one of those other states that are on the travel advisory list. So we feel that we've put out there a document that gets us as close as we can to strong assurances that if our staff or our contractors are going into a situation, whether it be a person's home or a place of employment or a school or what have you, that we are making sure that our staff person and contractor are safe, but also that our staff person and contractor fall within the same instructional parameters, that they're not going to go out into the community and put anybody else at risk if they've experienced in the last 14 days any of these things that are on the same questionnaire. So with that in mind, we have now at least opened up a greater level of service option that I think we'll start feeling closer to the kinds of services that we were able to deliver pre-COVID, obviously with safety always being first and foremost. The building is not really open for ongoing visitors to come in or staff to come in. There are only a small number of staff that are coming in on a very part-time basis, and we will occasionally agree to see a visitor at the building, but they have to be pre-screened and certified that they are free of those symptoms and those other questions that I just referenced. But the overwhelming majority of staff are still teleworking, and we anticipate that that will remain in place through the end of the calendar year. And obviously things will need to be reassessed as we get closer to the end of the calendar year to see whether or not the building could be reoccupied after the new year commences early in the year, or what COVID has done, and like I said, decisions will then be made around that. We are providing virtual services with a good amount of success. We have Microsoft Teams, all of the staff at Microsoft Teams, so that they can have virtual meetings. We are using teleconferencing, texting, email, but we are delivering services, and we have found that in the Voc Rehab program, as more employers are reopening, as the reopen plans have scooped up more employers that are now able to come back to work and have employees, we are pleased to say that we have clients who are indeed starting to get jobs in the community again. Up until recently, most of the jobs we were dealing with were virtual jobs, and now we are starting to see community-based job placements once again. So that's That's very encouraging to see that. I will pause right there before I just go on to a whole different subject matter, because there may be questions that folks have about how we're delivering services, what our plans are. So let me just pause for a moment and open it up.
Hey, Brian, this is Mike. As you guys open up for those limited in-person meetings, I may have missed it, I apologize. What's the target date for when you expect to begin doing that?
If there was a critical need that could not be addressed any other way but to have that one-on-one meeting at the building, then we would be able to permit that. But it is case by case. Both individuals would have to certify that all of the questions that are on that protocol questionnaire are ones that they can say no to each of them, so that we know that that would be a safe situation for them. And then we would arrange for that meeting with the 6-foot social distancing. But we are primarily doing things virtually. So we basically could arrange for that now if it needed to be done, just like we can arrange if somebody needed to have a service done in the community or in their home or at their school or place of employment. We have a mechanism in place right now where we can do that as long as the safety protocol is followed and the questionnaire is answered to allow for it to go forward.
Gotcha. Okay, and the American Job Center system is kind of operating in a similar fashion. Starting October 19th, the Department of Labor will start to entertain inquiries for people to come in for limited one-on-one appointments with safe distancing and plexiglass barriers and so forth, hand sanitizers, screening questions, just like you're describing, for clients who cannot participate virtually, whether it's because they have a disability or whether it's because they don't have access to technology or don't have an iPhone or a laptop or a tablet or whatever. So we're kind of doing something very similar to what you just described, although we're not prepared to do that as of today like you guys are. That would not be until October 19th, but some of the workforce boards around the state are serving clients on a limited basis, a one-on-one right now as well. So a lot of similarities between what the overall workforce system is doing and what you guys are doing at BSBE.
And again, I do want to stress that nobody can assert, from my staff at least, that what we have in place today is going to be what's in place a week from today. We have to follow
Sure.
the protocols that come out of the governor's office, and there are protocols that come from the Department of Administrative Services for the building occupancy. And so we're following those very clear instructions that we have, and if COVID changes its direction in one way or the other, we will, you know, certainly be prepared to adapt our current protocols accordingly. But at least that's where we are at right now, and I just wanted folks to be aware of that.
Great. Thank you for letting us know that.
This is Chief Brown. I have a question for Brian.
Go ahead.
Hi, Brian. Again, Jay Brown from the Department of Education, and some things you're talking about are very interesting from an educational perspective, because while I'm sure everyone's aware that many school districts have gone back full-time face-to-face in schools, I deal with lots of related service areas who at times are challenged by seeing kids and sometimes are asked to go into the homes even during these circumstances, these exceptional circumstances. And I'm wondering, do you by any chance have a current working document or even a draft protocol that you use where your folks who may go into the homes kind of have a checklist or something like that says, am I feeling this way? I better not go. Is the household experiencing this? I better not go. It's safe to go, et cetera. And I realize, again, this is a moving target. But do you have anything like that that's shareable that exists right now?
Yeah, that's our protocol questionnaire, which I'd be happy to forward to you, Jay. Now,
that's the question.
Yeah, those are the questions that we will ask of everyone that morning before our staff go into that environment. And our staff are bound by those same criteria that they should not be going out if they couldn't same questions themselves. But
is that a document that I could review just as an internal conversation in our bureau, not to be just adapted and used, but is that something I might be able to take a look at?
I'm happy to forward it to you so you can see, you know, what our staff are doing.
That's fantastic.
Certainly within our children's services program have been some questions that have come up because we have the Birth to Three program, and we also are active in all of the school districts except for those that have their own teachers, which is a very small number. And there is a wide range, as you know, of that are being taken. It's school district by school district makes their own decisions. In some school districts, we are being invited to come into the school. Other school districts are being, you know, very, very tight of who's allowed into the building. And there are some that are doing virtual services. So we are certainly taking the lead by whatever the school district's protocols are and their preferences are, recognizing that, as we've already seen, there's been some changes even since school opened based on how individual school districts are experiencing COVID in their town borders. But I'm certainly happy to share that with you so you can at least see what our staff are doing.
Fantastic. I appreciate it very much.
Brian, did you want to continue with your program update?
Yes,
I have one more question. I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is Jennifer from the Client Assistance Program. Brian, are your VR counselors running into any issues with CRPs not having the capacity to fulfill the services that they're recommending?
Sadly, yes, although it has improved. We informed last week that Oak Hill has sadly had to withdraw as a vendor, contracted vendor for Voc Rehab Services, and we're sad to see them withdraw, but they acknowledged that the reason was all about capacity issues, and I think that some of the other community providers were shut down for quite some time, but we have seen some reopenings and some vendors that are saying they're back with staff and they're able to accept referrals, and I am now seeing referrals and authorizations that are flowing to some of the providers. I think it has been a difficult road for them because they did not have funding in for quite a number of months as a result of the fact that we were all doing things virtually. Some of them were able to up some virtual services, including virtual job coaching they were able to do. But it was a difficult road for them. But I am encouraged by the number of authorizations I'm now starting to see that it's indicating we're seeing these community-based employment opportunities with the community-based supports that the providers are able to offer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to a whole different topic now with the Voc Rehab budget. This has been a very interesting time for the whole public vocational rehabilitation program across the nation, so it's not unique to our program. With all these providers that were shut down or greatly curtailing the services they were offering, there were very few opportunities for Voc Rehab programs to expend funds. Additionally, many of the colleges made a decision in the spring semester that they weren't going to allow people to remain on campus, and they made those decisions fairly early on in the semester. So room and board, which would be a fairly high cost expenditure, wasn't occurring with anywhere near the kind of frequency. So those two things, among other kinds of services that were being curtailed or greatly reduced, made it very difficult for Voc Rehab programs to find things that they could expend dollars on. that created a fiscal dilemma because voc rehab programs are required to spend in non-federal dollars the same level of dollars spent 2 years prior. Are folks still there? I just want to be sure you're still hearing me.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
We're here.
Good.
Yep.
I heard a beep, and I
yep,
was
I'm here.
Okay. So, as a result, many of the states have encountered a situation where because these opportunities to expend funds on services were greatly reduced, they aren't able to achieve the maintenance of effort requirements, which is that you have expended by September 30th of this year what you spent in non-federal dollars 2 years ago. Now, there is a mechanism within the law, the Rehab Act, where individual states may request a waiver of maintenance of effort under certain conditions. And when I give the legislative report, I'll talk a little bit more about that process. But right now, like almost every other state in the country, the voc rehab program here at BSBY is likely to not achieve maintenance of effort. I can almost say that with 100% certainty, as we're only a week away from the end of the fiscal year. And as a result, we will need to request a waiver along with many, many other states because of these circumstances we found ourselves in. In a similar scenario, our supported employment grant comes to us in two pieces. There's the youth portion, and then there's the adult portion. And the youth portion requires that you spend 10% of the funds toward a youth going into supported employment, and you have to use your non-federal matching fund. So basically for us, it's not a large amount, it's $2,500 that we need to expend in our youth portion of state dollars in order to keep the entire $45,000 federal grant, which is divided into the two sections, $22,500 for youth, $20,500 for adults. We were not able to secure a supported employment placement for a youth in time to commit to obligate these funds. So we had to turn back the entire federal supported employment allotment, the $45,000, to make it available for another state so that they could see if they might be able to benefit from those funds. So that was directly related to the lack of opportunities to place clients into supported employment in the community. On the flip side of that, every year there's a reallotment process. Some of you have been on the SRC for a while. You've heard me talk about this. There was a period of time that reallotment dollars had dwindled substantially, and as a result, our voc rehab program was looking like an order of selection would become necessary as soon as possibly even on the federal fiscal year that was going to be getting ready to start. Last year, we got a really nice reallotment amount, and that allowed us to shore up our budget, and things were looking much better. This year, we also got a very nice reallotment amount. We got $1.2 million. And so added to what we've had for last year's reallotment and our annual allotments that we get, our voc rehab program, thankfully, looks fairly solvent straight through federal fiscal year 2023. So compared to where we were 3 years ago, where we had to have some difficult conversations about how to kind of rein in costs if we wanted to stay out of an order of selection, I'm pleased to say that the VR budget is looking relatively strong at the moment. And so that's a nice piece of information to report. Certainly the supported employment funds that we had to give back were allowed to use our basic VR dollars for supported employment. So if we were to secure a supported employment placement, we would just use our basic federal dollars in order to do it. And come October 1, we'll get a new supported employment allotment. They'll give us the new one for the new federal year. On the business enterprises program, I need to report out that they're having some difficulties they're having difficulties from the standpoint of funding, because a good amount of their funding comes through commissions from sales of vending machines. And with so many buildings on public properties being near vacant, there's not a lot of people in those buildings to buy products out of those vending machines. So as a result, they're down about $100,000 from where they were a year ago at this time through the vending sales just dropping. And we've seen some substantial drops in these most recent months. So while they're down $100,000 for the one-year period comparison, when you look at, you know, like individual months since COVID hit, they're down substantially because, again, the buildings are barely occupied. Similarly, our vending facilities that are run by, you know, the Entrepreneurs That Are Blind under the Business Enterprise Program, most of those locations are shut right now. There's no one to serve food to in these locations. And those that have reopened with such limited staffing coming into the building that they would not have enough staff for it to be a sustainable business for the vending facility manager. So other than a couple micro marts that we have open, we were able to open up, we have two beaches that we were able to have open this summer because the beaches were open. So we did have two vending facility operators that were able to run businesses at two of the beaches, and also at Gillette's Castle, we were able to run that this summer. But where we are at right now is, like the rest of the country, until people start reoccupying public buildings in sufficient numbers, there's many, many, many folks that are the entrepreneurs that are not working right now. And it's been quite a difficult hardship for these individuals. And so that's where we're at with that update. Just a couple other quick staffing updates. We had had two pre-employment transition counselors who left the agency, one retired, one transferred to another bureau within the agency. Those two positions have now been filled. Stacey Ann Lewis has replaced the pre-ed counselor vacancy that's in the northern half of the state. And Charlotta Copenhaver, who some of you may know, has transferred into the VR pre-ed counselor position in the southern half of the state. And so those are very new developments. They just transpired. And then the last thing I just want to say is Mary Burgard is out on extended leave. So if folks need to reach someone in VR, you can certainly reach out to me and Jonathan Richmond, who's our lead counselor. And that is my report.
Brian, this is Jay Brown again. Just as a point of information that may be somewhat encouraging, at the Bureau of Special Ed, we certainly were in a very similar situation with respect to maintenance of effort for school districts. And one of the things that we found, although I realize your situation is different in that you're dealing with far fewer federal funds and more state funds than we are, the federal government was fairly lenient in issuing waivers this year with respect to maintenance of effort on our part, because school districts certainly, you know, we're aware that students with disabilities are a significant part of every school district's budget. And with kids being home from March to the end of the school year, it was a significant chunk that didn't get spent on those students in the same way that would have, or just didn't get spent at all. So just as kind of a point of encouragement, the federal government at least seemed fairly flexible with respect to giving us our waiver and allowing school districts an extra 6 months with last year's funding to get that spent in order to make some effort because of the COVID-related situation. So I'm hoping that also will apply to you in some way.
We're certainly hoping that as well, and I guess when I go into the legislative update, I'll talk a little bit about what's going on with that. But thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any questions on the topics I covered before I kind of transition over on the legislative side? Okay.
So, Brian, this is Mike. So it sounds like order of selection is off the table for the foreseeable future, correct? Because of our solid financial standing right now?
That is correct. I am very pleased to say that based on our funding as it stands, we are in good positioning to continue to serve all eligible individuals, looking at the moment through federal fiscal 23.
Okay, great. Good news. That's great to hear.
Shifting over to the legislative update, I guess the first thing I would say is state of Connecticut, like many other states, because of COVID-19, has experienced a significant drop-off in the dollars that are being paid into the state budget from sales taxes and from income taxes for obvious reasons. So we in the state of Connecticut, again, like many other states, I think are challenged on how to balance a budget that is very lean from the income side of things. So as we go into the new legislative session, you know, obviously we are anticipating that there will be some impact on state agency budgets as a result of the deficit. I don't know at this point what they could be, what they could look like. I think that from the Voc Rehab Program perspective, obviously it is very important that we maintain as much of our non-federal dollars as we can, because we need those dollars in order to not only meet maintenance of effort requirements in years where there may not be such an economic reason to seek a waiver, because waivers don't necessarily always get approved if you don't fall into the categories of where they're approvable. But, you know, additionally, we have a matching requirement that we have to remain within. So I guess everything I say about the federal allotments and the budget that we have, we're looking very good as things stand now, but we're also having a keen eye toward seeing where the state budget is going to go when that budget comes out in the next legislative session. We also recognize, as Jay has said, that the federal government knows that they may be getting, I think there's 78 Voc Rehab programs in the United States. That includes the island territories. They may be seeing upwards of 78 individual requests for maintenance of effort that they're going to have to review. So the Secretary of Education put forth to Congress some proposals that would allow for blanket waivers of certain things. States not only are having difficulty with reaching their maintenance of effort, states are experiencing a similar dilemma in spending the 15% required set aside of the Voc Rehab allotment for pre-employment transition services. With the schools not open and so many work-based learning opportunities not being available, summer camps that either shut down entirely or converted to less expensive virtual camps, there were far fewer dollars being expended on pre-employment transition services. So those dollars were basically unavailable for anything other than pre-employment. And that's 15% of your federal VR budget that's set aside only for that. So the Secretary of Education recommended to Congress that there should be consideration for blanket waivers for maintenance of effort, for pre-employment transition services, and for some other additional things as well. What ended up going into the Senate version of the stimulus bill was a waiver for a maintenance of effort and was a waiver for pre-employment transition. Additionally, there was also some funding proposed for the business enterprise programs across the country to help in recognition of the dilemmas that they're experiencing. Obviously, if you've been following in national news, neither the Senate version of the stimulus bill nor the House version of the stimulus bill, which does not have the waivers in it, have moved forward. So at this point, we truly don't know what the future holds in terms of that, but I did want folks to be aware that that's where those were at. and that's the legislative update.
Okay, great. Brian, thank you very much for that. So the last thing I think on our agenda is a report from the chair. So I will just say this in closing. Just want to thank everybody for their contributions today. Obviously, we're living in an extraordinary time, which makes it more difficult for BSBE to provide services to the public in the way that we're all normally accustomed to. And I think it's important that we recognize that the health and the safety of the public, as well as the BSBE staff, dictates that the services continue to be delivered either virtually or in a safe manner, like you described earlier today, Brian, in the meeting with the social distancing and following the recommendations from the governor's office. So I think we as the SRC clearly understand all the challenges that you guys face, and I just want to thank you and your staff for all that you guys are doing to maintain services to our clients in spite of all the technology and the logistical challenges that you guys are facing right now. So thank you to you and your team. And again, thank you to all of our SRC members this morning for your thoughts and ideas and contributions. So that concludes my remarks. So at this point, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting and then reconvene back on December 16th for our next meeting. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
This is John McNichol. I move we adjourn.
John, thank you. And a second?
This is Gary Allen, a second.
Gary, thank you very much. Okay, that concludes our meeting. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.